The Internet, the final frontier.
Well, hello. On today's episode, we'll talk about what we're thankful for. Also, I'll talk about my top five favorite bass players, and Colin will talk about our top 10 actors who need to have their faces flattened with a kayak paddle. I'm Justin Eisenstadt.
I'm Colin Kakamas.
I'm Sean Holm.
And you just got to the good part. Strap in and sit tight, because we are boldly going nowhere. Hello and welcome to episode 42 of Boldly Going Nowhere. I'm Justin Eisenstadt.
I'm Colin Kakamas.
I'm Sean Holmes.
And Ben Price is not with us today.
Wah, wah.
Who knows what that guy's up to?
He's out on business.
On business.
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 Yeah,
business.
He's very businesslike.
A very important gentleman.
Business.
So this, of course, will be our special Thanksgiving episode, since by the time you hear this, Thanksgiving will probably be tomorrow.
So we're ready to talk turkey.
Yeah.
Okay. But that comes later.
Yes, yes, the actual talking turkey of this show will come later. Mm-hmm. But of course, since it's Thanksgiving, I'd like us, in the spirit of the holiday, to sit around the table, sit around the podcast table, and talk about what we're thankful for. And what I'm thankful for is Podomatic's stat tracking system that has a map and shows us where our listeners are. Yeah. By which is a roundabout way of saying that I'm thankful for you, our listeners.
Yes.
And the fact that we do actually have listeners.
Yeah.
God bless you all.
Thank you for downloading it. At least, you know, if you just let it play in the background, still thank you.
Thank you for wasting your spare time by listening to us drone on. Yeah. We really appreciate it.
I mean, because as of right now, sad to say, we still don't get a whole lot of feedback from you, the listeners. I'm hoping that will change. But as it is, it's still, you know, sometimes easy to feel like we're just sitting here in a vacuum talking out into empty space.
Right.
So it's nice to know that there are actually people listening. And right now, I would actually like to pinpoint where those people are.
We're gonna give a shout out to the listeners.
Yeah. So if you're in, you know, some of the following places and you're listening, I'm talking about you, Tim. I'm just saying a name. Hopefully,
we don't know if Tim is your actual name, but if it is,
if your name is Tim,
sitting in the car or doing your lawn duty,
or you, Samir,
you Muhammad, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
There's
Juan.
Like a lot of guys named Muhammad.
Yeah. Carlos, thank you as well.
People.
All right, enough just, saying random
yeah,
names. Say,
yeah, please.
So the way Podomatic. It's the way its statistics tracking is set up is it's divided into several categories. You have plays, likes, follows, comments, visits, and downloads. So we'll start with just visits. So visits is just anyone who has gone to our webpage. It doesn't say anything about whether they've actually listened to an episode or not, but that's just all the people who have seen the Podomatic page, seen our logo, and probably since they didn't speak English, kept clicking and went to a different site.
Right.
It's definitely possible. Who knows?
So we're going to run down the top five countries that we get visitors from. Of course, logically, USA is number one.
This is because that's the country we all hail from. So.
Yes. Yeah. The time frame we're looking at is October 1st through today. So we're looking at our statistics for the last 2 months. And we've received 2,296 visits from the USA. This is out of 3,007 visits total. And number two for visits is actually Ireland.
Surprisingly enough.
Yeah, so there's 106 visits from Ireland, but only one play and no downloads.
They really like the look of our page.
So we don't actually have fans in Ireland. We just have curious window shoppers, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Number three is Canada with 101 visits. But Canada, that we actually do have some fans. We'll get to that when we talk about the plays and the downloads. Number four, the UK, also a place where we know we have actual listeners. And then we get a lot, similar to Ireland, we get a lot of visits from Russia. But again, only one play and no downloads. Probably because they don't speak English.
Yeah.
So they can't read this page or anything about it. We get a couple. We get some from Germany.
I think that's China.
Yeah, that's China. You know, Australia, France, all over the place, everywhere from.
This is probably the one that surprised me the most. We have, at least in the 2 month period, we've had 38 visits from Ghana.
Yeah, well, we're gonna get to you. We're gonna get to you, Ghana. We're gonna talk about you in more detail. But we've got people from everywhere, from Thailand.
I mean, it's totally awesome.
The Ivory Coast,
Chile,
Moldova, Nicaragua,
Norway, South Africa,
Malaysia, Philippines, Poland, Belgium, all over the place.
New Zealand,
Brazil.
These are just people who have just visited the page. So I mean, that's kind of cool. Yeah. But how many of them actually are listening to the show? So we can look at plays, and here's who's actually...
Johannesburg. Awesome.
Here's who's actually played episodes.
Once again, the U.S. tops out at 307.
So, yeah, we have 307 plays, and if we want to look more specifically inside the USA, you can also look inside the regions. Our biggest areas in the USA are D.C., because
yeah.
that's
the really big dot on D.C. with 89 plays.
That's our network. And Pittsburgh, which also makes sense, because that's pretty close. But interestingly enough, we have a pretty sizable following in Wichita, Kansas.
Right.
So if you're right out there in Wichita right now, drop us a line. Tell us how you found the show and, I guess, why you decided to keep listening.
Same goes for all of you.
Actually, you know, there's another one. My old hometown, Buffalo.
Yeah.
We got 14 plays in Buffalo.
Yeah, we got some people in Buffalo.
Boston.
We got people in Boston.
Is that Seattle?
A handful of people in Seattle.
Honolulu.
But really all over
Hawaii.
The country.
Yeah, California, Texas, Florida.
I mean, really pretty much every region except like...
Montana.
Yeah, the big...
The Dakotas.
The big empty states up north.
No downloads in potato country.
Yeah, but I mean, people all over, so that's cool. And then Canada is number two.
And actually, that was a surprising stat that I... Because I honestly don't, I mean, like, you know, I, like, for instance, like, in, like, Atlanta and in, you know, Buffalo, I mean, I have family there, so, you know, they might be, you know, talking about it and stuff like that, but I don't, unless you guys do, I mean, I don't know people in Vancouver.
Yeah, I mean, people in Vancouver have played it, Winnipeg,
Toronto,
Montreal,
Ottawa,
Edmonton, Calgary.
Right,
so,
it's crazy, I mean... Yeah, so if you're in Canada, please zip us a line. Let us know how you found us.
And now let's look at the statistic that probably is actually the best indicator of where our fans are. Not just people who randomly played it or clicked an episode, but people who've actually downloaded episodes. And this also, I believe, includes people who viewed our RSS feed. And there's another statistic that shows you unique RSS views, which used to be called subscribers. So that actually lets us know how many people... actually subscribe to the RSS and get it through iTunes or Zune or whatever RSS service you want. So, once again, USA, number
tops
one.
Tops out the list.
And, of course, the biggest areas in the U.S. are D.C.
Well, D.C. is a definite, you know, understandable
I mean, that's where all the people who actually know
it is personally. It groups in Frederick, Maryland also.
Yeah.
Because that's
where
we're based.
But then you've also surprisingly...
And then number two is actually Atlanta.
Right now, I thought at first that it was my sister, but we've got 48 downloads, which I'm like, okay.
Seems unlikely that it's all your
it
sister.
Seems unlikely my sister would go and download all 40 episodes of our show.
Is Paula Deen listening?
Is Paula Deen from Atlanta?
I don't know. She seems like she's from Atlanta. I've just made an uneducated guess.
She's probably joining the war against healthy foods.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, so number two,
Canada with 96.
And actually, most all of the downloads in Canada are in Winnipeg. 77.
And I can explain this. I can
77
explain
77 downloads in
Winnipeg. Oh, you can explain this.
Yeah, because we had a lot of downloads in Winnipeg for BS Reviews.
Ah.
And you know, we obviously, when our last episode outsourced to India came, they moved over here.
So the fan base combined.
Awesome. Yes. Well, thank you, people
Winnipeg.
In Winnipeg, for sticking with Ben and Sean, and I hope... that you find us just as entertaining as
hopefully.
A group, as an ensemble.
But we love you. We love you, Winnipeg.
And then here's my favorite statistic of all of this. The number three spot where we actually get downloads is Ghana.
Yeah.
More specifically, Accra, Ghana. We have a small but extremely dedicated following in Ghana. Because 23 downloads. But every single episode, there is at least like 2 or 3 downloads in Ghana.
Yeah, because, I mean, between every October day. And now, I think we've only done like, what, at least only like 8 or 9 episodes. 8 to 10.
Yeah, we've probably done 10 to...
8 to 10. So that means that they're downloading it. There are like at least 2 people in Ghana downloading.
Yeah.
Every episode.
Yeah.
Which in a 2 month period.
So those are the people I really, really want to hear from. If you're one of our listeners in Ghana.
Drop us a line.
Yeah.
At bgnpodcast@gmail.com. We want to hear from you.
Yeah. Tell us how you found the show. Why you decided to start listening, and just what's it like being in Ghana. Like, I've never been to Ghana. I've never even been to Africa, so...
I know, but I mean, let's not sell short the others. We got 18 in the UK.
Yep. And that's in the UK, mainly in Westminster,
East Riding, East Riding of Yorkshire.
That's, I love Yorkshire. English names.
Yorkshire.
Bradford and Barnsley.
Now, I think there's 2 reasons behind that. One is... John Allison, when we interviewed him at MSPX.
Yeah, I would say probably that's most of the reason.
But no, also, we follow a British science fiction magazine over there.
Hmm.
And they follow us as well.
Ah.
On Twitter, at least. So yeah. They might be. Starburst Magazine, if you're out there.
Yeah.
Email us at bgnpodcast@gmail.com. Yeah. We want to hear from you.
Definitely, definitely.
Yes.
And we have, you know, definitely if you're an international listener, those just in any country, those are the people we really want to hear from. But, you know, we got a couple in Norway, in Germany.
Germany.
The Netherlands.
But 5 in the Netherlands.
Yeah. But what's also very interesting, Vietnam, we have 14 downloads.
All in Hanoi.
So really curious how people in Hanoi found the show. So also you guys should send us an email at bgnpodcast@gmail.com. So I'm thankful that we have people listening to the show. I'm thankful that, you know, we get to hang out and do this every week.
1 download in Nicaragua.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I forgot that. I missed that.
I found it. I was like, yay.
It's a tiny little dot.
Nicaragua.
Right down there.
But
Central America.
It's a download?
In Managua.
1.
Managua, Nicaragua.
Thank you.
I wonder which episode it was. That's the one I'm curious. About.
I wish they could they put specific
do
episodes.
Do it by episode, yeah.
Well, they can do it. They do downloads over time, which most of our downloads are 39.
We can see which episodes have gotten the most downloads, but not by region. But I guess episode 39 is number 1. Actually, your bonus BS review with Donkey's Bazooka is number 2. In terms of most downloads.
And that's it's cutting it close. It's only by 5 downloads.
Probably because he posted it or put it on Twitter or something.
Yeah. Then number 3, we have episode 38, The Ride Home.
That was our post JMB Orgone show review.
Yeah.
Yeah, episode 37, Ecto Cooler.
I still like feel like I'm getting diabetes from that.
Yeah.
That one glass was enough to kill me.
Yeah.
So good.
It was
though.
Delicious. Oh, yeah. It was delicious, but still.
Episode I love Ecto 32, Cooler. Our summer movie recap. And episode 36, Beverage Update, which.
Which is when we first discovered the recipe for said Ecto Cooler.
Yeah, that was a fun one.
And so, actually, the site, I think it was the site we found that from, was like, it had only been verified by like 2 sources. Bully Going Nowhere verifies this tastes like Ecto Cooler.
Yeah. So. We're really thankful for you, the listeners, but we want you to spread some of that love back to us. Here's what you can do for us if you are thankful for Boldly Going Nowhere. Speak up. We want to hear from you. I mean, we really need more comments, followers. We need people actually emailing us about the show. I mean, the thing is, we're pretty highly ranked on Podomatic, but we only have 4 followers on Podomatic.
And I mean, that could just be because, you know...
It's the Podomatic site, and probably most of our fans come through, you know, iTunes, Zune...
Or Facebook.
Or Facebook.
And the Tumblr, you know.
Yeah.
Which is fine. So I don't really care that much about the Podomatic community itself. It's cool
we love
that
you
they
all
support
just
us.
As equally, but...
Yeah, I mean, we have like 200 friends
we
on Podomatic.
We want to not only hear how you guys found us and how you guys listen to us, but we also want to hear from you as to how you think we can make this better.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, like, you know, segments you might want to hear, something you think we can improve on.
Yeah.
We're totally up for it.
Yeah.
You send it, more than likely we might read it on air.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we're giving you guys lots of opportunities to participate. We really want to make this show a communal effort. Because we want you guys to be involved in the creation of this show. And yes. Then when I get to my music segment in just a second, I'll talk about a new opportunity for you guys on top of all the many other opportunities we already have.
Ooh, a new opportunity.
What I ask is if you're going to send us comments or suggestions, do it in one of two places. Either do it on the actual Podomatic page. Actually leave a comment on an episode or on the page in general. Or number two, send it to our email address, bgnpodcast@gmail.com. Facebook comments, Twitter stuff, that's cool, but not quite as helpful because we can't use it as much in our numbers. So, all right. Moving on with the show, time to talk about music.
And you got a sound effect.
I do have a sound effect.
And it goes right here.
Hey, top five songs about death. Allura's Dad tribute list.
All right. Thanks, Jack Black. Today I'm going to talk about another top five instrumentalists. Last week I talked about my top five favorite guitar players. Today I'm going to talk about my top five bass players, or as Murray from Flight of the Conchords would call it, the dad guitar.
It's a dad guitar. Yeah.
So at number five... Gotta love Murray.
Yeah, I love Murray.
Or Reese Darby. Number five, Geddy Lee, who is the lead singer of Rush, but also the bass player.
Today's dumb, so I gets high on you.
I'm a spicy I'm so discontent. And then the bass comes in and it's awesome. Like, seriously, Geddy Lee, he puts on a show for you. I mean, he's doing singing and playing the bass and doing keyboards, and he's got like a million different foot pedals he's got.
I mean, I saw them at the First Mariner Arena in Baltimore. Epic show.
Epic. I saw him at
Neil Peart.
Nissan, or I guess it's not called Nissan Pavilion anymore.
There's no greater drummer than Neil Peart.
Seriously, because he has like this spinning stage, and he just spins around, and it's like all moving. Kids. There's blinking lights underneath of it.
I mean, we could and probably will do an entire music segment sometime just about it to Rush, because as you know, Rush is variety.
Bitch, yeah,
bitch.
But seriously, Geddy Lee is an awesome bass player. Just listen to YYZ, because that's just an instrumental track. Seriously, the man's got chops.
Yes. Yeah.
Number four, Les Claypool.
Okay.
Les Claypool is a virtuoso, for sure, on the bass, but he's got a very eclectic style, and it might not be for everyone. You know, Primus isn't exactly, I would call, the most accessible band.
My name is Mud.
Yeah. Tommy the Cat, that's my name. But seriously,
Jerry was a race car driver.
I mean, the man, he's very his style is all over the place.
Strong as any man alive.
Yeah. And he's also he's a weird guy. He dresses up in weird clothes, but he's done a lot of side projects. But his playing style is not your typical bass playing style. He does tapping, flamenco like strumming. He uses a whammy bar on a bass, which is pretty cool. He's also putting out films, apparently.
In 2006, he put out a movie called Electric Apricot,
written and directed by Claypool.
Ooh.
Which is a mockumentary film about a band, a fictional band called Electric Apricot. He's also just put out a novel called South of the Pump House, which is a tragic tale containing themes of family, racism, drugs, and misconceptions.
According to at least Wikipedia.
The book describes the San Francisco and San Pablo Bays and the fishing the areas have to offer. So I guess he's really into fishing.
Tom and Caddy's
See,
which
now,
actually I guess makes sense because he has the whole like sort John of trilogy Fisherman. Of songs. Yes,
John the Fisherman.
About there's like three songs about fishermen or fishing.
See, yeah. See, when you said rockumentary, now I want to watch Spinal Tap.
Yeah,
this one goes up to.
So the Emon is the saddest of the chords. It's the saddest chord.
All right, number three, Victor Wooten.
I was listening to him today, actually. classical thump.
Yeah, I mean, I could probably put Victor Wooten number one if this was just, like, best or most proficient, but I haven't listened to him as much as some of the other ones on the list, but the what little stuff I have listened to by Victor Wooten is amazing.
So you're
really good cover of Amazing Grace.
Yeah.
And so what you're saying is this list could change if you listen to more Victor Wooten.
Yes, it could always change if I listen to more Victor Wooten. As just, most changes, most yeah. lists would change.
Yeah.
The more Victor Wooten you listen to.
Yeah.
But like he plays like crazy basses, you know.
His hands like just look like a bass player's
six
hands.
String basses, eight string basses. Yeah. I've seen like, I don't know, more strings than I can count.
Yeah.
Because I'm not very good. I mean, that's why I only do top five, because I can't count much higher than that. It starts getting a little rough over here.
A little rough.
Mm. And although that reminds me of one of the honorable mentions that I wanted to include that I didn't put on the list, but Tony Levin, who's a bass player who's done work with a lot of artists, King Crimson, Genesis, a lot of different bands, and he...
Genesis, really?
Yeah, I mean, he's not, like, their main bass player. That would Mike Rutherford has been the longtime bass player for Genesis. He's pretty awesome, too. But Tony Levin's done a lot of stuff with a lot of people. And he is well-known for playing an instrument called the Chapman stick. It's invented by another guy called Graham Chapman. But Tony Levin is really awesome on it.
Graham Chapman?
Yeah.
As in the dude from Monty Python?
No. So different Graham Chapman.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe it's not Graham Chapman. It's a different... Let me look it up real quick.
Yeah. I was going to say.
But he... If you listen to the King Crimson album, Discipline, there's one song in particular, Elephant Talk, that really shows off Tony Levin playing the Chapman stick. It's so funky. It's yeah. awesome. Because it's cool. only tapping. There's no strumming or picking. On a Chapman stick, you only tap.
Yeah, I was looking at some tapping videos today.
Sorry, you're right. It's Emmett Chapman. Emmett mm-hmm. Chapman invented the Chapman stick in the early 1970s.
Shane Lentz, I don't know what band he's for, but he's played for Comic Cabay. But Shane Lentz, look him up. He has a really good... bass solo where he taps shredding.
Yeah, and the Chapman stick usually has 10 or 12 strings, so it's kind of crazy. Yeah, Tony Levin, he's played with Peter Gabriel, King Crimson, Pink Floyd, and he is one of the members of Liquid Tension Experiment, which I know that you are a big
yeah,
fan of.
Yeah, that, wow, he's really good then.
Yes.
Yep.
I love Liquid Tension Experiment.
All right, number two on the list, I have Chris Squire. Chris Squire is the bass player for Yes, and is actually the only member of the band who has never left the band, who has been in every single incarnation of the band. And Yes has had, like, you know, 40-something plus years career. So Chris Squire is awesome. In fact, he's probably the person that made me interested in actually listening to the bass part. And a guitar. Because there's sort of the popular conception that the bass player is like the least interesting person in the band, or like no one cares about the bass player, or no one listens to the bass part.
It's true.
But the thing is, Chris Squire is not like that at all. His bass playing is noted for being aggressive, dynamic, and actually melodic, which is interesting because most people don't think of bass as playing melody. They think of bass as a rhythm instrument. It's part of the rhythm section.
Right.
Which usually is. But Chris Squire, his bass often takes the lead on a lot of parts. Too many songs to name, but there's one part that's in Close to the Edge, sort of middle of the song, that has a really sick bass part. He's just awesome. He sings, he does backup vocals, and he also has some pretty interesting setup on his equipment. So what he does is he takes the signal from his bass and he splits it and sends it through two different amps so that the bass comes through a typical bass amplifier. But then he sends the high output, the treble output, to a regular guitar amp. So that way you hear both the bass parts and sort of the higher lead parts on the bass equally clearly, and it just sounds really awesome. And that way he doesn't, you know, have, you don't get the flat, fuzzy sound, the loss of power, and poor response that often happen when you put bass guitars through distortion or overdrive them.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, number one is Stanley Clarke. So if you're not familiar with Stanley Clarke, he is sort of more jazz player, but he played with, most famous for playing the band called Return to Forever. It's a jazz rock band. With a lot, I mean, pretty much every single person in that band is a virtuoso. Al Di Meola, one of the best guitar players of all time. And Chick Corea is an amazing keyboardist. But Stanley Clarke, probably the best part of that band. And if you want to listen to one of his solo efforts, check out the album School Days. But I saw Return to Forever playing in New York.
Hmm.
And Stanley Clarke was my favorite part. I really thought Al Di Meola was going to be the best part for me. But Stanley Clarke is amazing. I mean, he plays like a motherfucker. That's how I'll put it. And the best part about that show was that Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was there.
Oh, yeah. He mentioned that in the previous episode.
Yeah. So,
Kareem.
Kareem just came up on stage.
It's an honor to be here. I gotta go back and enjoy the concert.
Yeah. So the cool thing about Stanley Clarke is that, you know, he's a trained classical musician, so he plays bass guitar like he's playing an upright bass, and he actually plays upright bass a lot in his shows too. But he's got crazy huge, he's just like really lanky. He's like huge fingers, really long arms, so he's really good at slapping the bass.
Slapping the bass.
He's really funky, but then also similar to Chris Squire, like sort of melodic or lead parts on the bass as well are really cool. So that's my top five list of bass players. Other, you know, people I left out. Jaco Pastorius, another awesome bass player.
Would you say you're the ace of bass?
I might, but I wouldn't because that would be stupid.
Well, you don't go chasing waterfalls.
Can we just listen to that song?
No. Ugh, why would you want to do that?
I'm gonna be honest. I kind of really like that song.
Don't go making phony calls.
Only stick to the seven-digit numbers you're used to. I'm gonna be honest.
For fuck's sake.
Waterfalls by TLC, kind of an awesome song.
Yeah.
You know what else I discovered to find that was a kind of an awesome song? Like, no shame here. I'm just gonna say it. But Lena made me a bunch of mix CDs to listen to in the car since my tape player broke. You know, I have to use CDs, which I realize that sounds super hipster to say that.
Colin, like, you didn't join me in that? No.
No.
Yeah, you're not part of the studio audience?
No.
Like, I realize how, like, hipstery that sounds to be like, oh, my tape player broke, so I have to use CDs. But it's because I use, you know, a cassette adapter for my MP3 player.
Yeah, uh-huh.
But she made me these mixies. I had no idea what was on the CDs because she didn't really label them. And so I'm listening, and Spice Girls, Spice Up Your Life comes on.
Spice and I'm like, alive.
I'm like, I'm about to alive. Skip the song. I'm like, am I really about to listen to the Spice Girls? But then I'm like, you know what?
I want to really zigzag.
Well, it's not that song.
Oh, I don't know. They're all the same to me.
But, I mean, just hear me out, okay? It's like, it's 6:30 in the morning. I'm driving to work, my morning commute, driving up back road, you know, Marriottsville Road, and I'm going up these really long, windy, narrow roads with, like, trees all around me. There's no one else on the road.
My dress is really getting in the way of my shifter.
And Spice Girls, Spice Up Your Life. And I'm like, okay, let's just see what happens. Because I had skipped a couple songs on the CD. Like, it's not like I just was like, oh, I'll listen to every single, like, Vanessa Carlton came on, skip instantly. I hate that song. Hate Vanessa Carlton. I'm sorry. Well, I don't hate Vanessa Carlton. I just hate that song.
Yeah, click.
Seriously, I thought I knew you.
I should sometime do a list, a top five list.
If you want to be my lover, you know, you got to get with my friends.
But know. Spice Up Your Life, that song, it really pumped me up. I was just like, this song is awesome. I can't believe I didn't realize how awesome this song is.
Spice Up Your Life, Kyle?
It really spiced up my life.
Yeah,
it was that's like, bam.
It didn't spice
up your life.
Zest.
Didn't spice up my life.
That's all I remember is like, spice up your
spice
life.
Spice up your life.
Oh, God. No. It's audible cancer.
See, I know. See?
Good.
See, this is your...
It's like LFL 65, but worse.
This is your fault.
But yeah, I mean...
This is your fault.
I'm blue.
You let him talk about Spice Girls.
I think my next two top five lists are going to be... next week is going to be top five bands that you'd be surprised to find that I like. And then top five bands that you'd be surprised to find that I hate.
Yeah, if Spice Girls is on that first list, I'm going to have to stab you through the heart.
No, because it's just that one song.
Okay.
But like, for example, Outkast... That Outkast is on the list.
Yes.
Outkast is actually fucking awesome.
Ah, push that push. Everybody move to the back of the bus.
Yeah. I mean, sorry, Miss Jackson.
Ooh, I am for real.
Love that song. So Fresh and So Clean. Love it. Even as played out as it was, I was...
Bombs Over Baghdad.
What? Hey Ya, you know? It was on that mix CD too, and I was like...
It was catchy, though. I've heard
the song so many times, but you know what?
Has a decent rock influence, I think.
As for like stupid pop song, it still has like I would say more substance than say like Black Eyed Peas.
Because it's not auto-tune.
But I'll get into this in future episodes. Yeah, future. But then like a preview for a song that you'd be surprised that I actually hate, Steve Miller Band. Like you might think as a person who loves classic rock.
I actually know this from experience.
That I love Steve Miller Band.
I like Steve Miller Band, and every time he's in the car.
Everyone I know loves Steve. I'm the only person I've
Some people met. Call me the gangster of love.
No, here. Yeah. Let me
I have yet to meet another person.
I don't love Steve Miller Band. He has four good songs in my opinion.
Call me Maurice.
He only has four good songs. It's The Joker, Abracadabra.
Look, I'm not Save it, all right?
I'm just saying.
We'll talk about it in more detail. Believe me, we'll get into Steve Miller Band. It's just I've yet to meet a single person who didn't, like, judge me when I said I didn't like Steve Miller Band.
I didn't judge you.
You judged me.
No, I did not.
You did. All right, moving on. The other thing I want to do for my music segment today, of course, provide you with some education.
Ooh, he's pulling out the Rock Snobs book.
Absolutely.
The Rock Snobs Dictionary.
It's time for y'all to get educated here.
Hipsters, prepare to get boners.
Yeah. Or, you know, whatever.
Whatever
you're doing. Whatever.
Whatever.
Whatever floats your boat.
Chick boners.
It's time for another reading from the Rock
Chick
Snobs.
Chick boners.
It's possible.
You just talked right over my thing. You talked right over my...
I'm sorry.
Is that book good?
Intro
good,
again.
What's that good what? Come on. Well, what is it? Starts with a W.
Is this, you're going to do this, Sean? You're going to do this right here?
Okay.
All right. Time for another reading from the Rock Snobs Dictionary. It's an essential lexicon of rockological knowledge by David Camp and Stephen Daly. And today, flipping to a random entry, we're going to talk about a guy with a funny name, Rye Cooter. Get it out
kidding.
Now.
He's not kidding. That's actually
get it out
the name
now.
Here.
Okay.
You good?
That was my maiden name. They used to call me Rye Cooter in high school.
All right.
I hope I don't have to do a different entry.
With but... Roy.
All right. Anyway, start.
All right. Rye Cooter is a crack blues guitarist who rises above the station of mere respected sessioner because of his soundtrack work. Most notably for the films of Wim Wenders and Walter Hill.
Such august films they are.
And his truly snob-boggling resume. As a teenage guitar prodigy in Los Angeles in the 60s, Cooter played on sessions for Jackie DeShannon before hooking up with the black blues folky Taj Mahal in the short-lived seminal blues rock band The Rising Suns. Thereafter, Cooter, a slide virtuoso, was sought out by Captain Beefheart and the Rolling Stones to play on their albums. At ease, despite his scrubbed prepster appearance in any number of ethnic idioms, Cooter is a cornerstone of the world music movement, having collaborated with Hawaiian, African, Japanese, and Indian musicians, and having been the prime mover behind the Buena Vista Social Club phenomenon, in which he gave Cuba's pre-Castro music greats, Company Segundo, Ibrahim Ferrero et al., a new lease on life.
Actually, yeah, I did listen to Buena Vista Social Club. It is actually pretty sweet.
Way to go, Cooter.
Hey. Put a rein on that shit. Okay? We're professionals here.
Yeah.
Sure we are.
Don't forget that, Sean. Professionalism.
Okay.
Remember the three P's of this podcast.
I think I have it under control, but you have to say the name. Just make sure I don't.
Cooter.
Professionalism. Punctuality.
Okay.
And pie.
All right, ready, Sean? Okay. You want to give it to you one more time?
All right.
Okay. We'll practice this until we can get it. Nope. All right. Let's try again.
We got time.
All right. I'm just going to say the name until you can listen to it without laughing. Are you ready?
Give him a minute.
You ready?
Okay. Go ahead.
Rye Cooter.
See, he started laughing.
You're setting a bad example, Colin.
I got through that entire review. I got through that entire entry without laughing.
You know, there's blue mics in the room, so right. we're gonna go blue for here for a second.
All right, try one more time. Last time. Ready?
All right. I can stand this. All right. Yeah, I got it.
Rye Cooter.
Okay, I think I'm good. There's nothing sick about rye.
I see you're trying to crack.
Rye, being a piece of bread.
I'm good.
And that's why
I'm good. I'm good.
Jewish thing early.
I'm good.
Okay. Right, good? We'll practice this more later. On to you, Colin, for movies.
Okay. And normally there's a sound effect that goes right about here. Alright. So, alright. Last week I did my top 10 favorite actors. That was the ones I enjoy watching the most, not who I think are the most accomplished. That'll come in a later list. But now I have to do the opposite end of the spectrum, the actors I truly hate. But hate is such a strong word, so what I'm actually going to title this is it's the top 10 actors who need to have their faces flattened by a kayak paddle.
Honestly, I think that's a stronger description than the word hate. That's a vague term. I can visualize that, you smacking an actor with a kayak paddle.
Yeah.
How did you just, like, why kayak paddle as opposed to, like, canoe paddle?
Any paddle would really work. It's just any kayak popped into my head.
Any rafting implement?
Yeah, any rafting. Like, you could, like, blow up a raft, or you could get short round and just beat him to death with that.
What, with short
kayak,
round?
Yeah. See, kayak paddle, you got the both ends. You got the both paddles on each end, so you can wipe them, flip it over, and then wipe them again.
Yeah. All right, so this could be top 10 actors who need to have their faces flattened by a kayak paddle, or top 10 actors who need to have their faces flattened with diminutive Asian sidekicks.
Yes. Precisely. Okay, well, I'm going to start first with my honorable mentions, because there are quite a few, to be honest. First and foremost...
Can I intro one of them?
Go ahead.
I'm going to take out your endocrine system.
Yeah, Gary Busey. Gary Busey, if you've ever seen him on television, Gary Busey's a total asshole
and just insane.
Well, yeah, but
the dog barking. It's not my dog.
Yeah, but I mean, his teeth—they're just so perfect.
Yeah, he looks like he's already been
him and his. Yeah, well, I mean, and that and the fact that the only reason he's not on the list is because, quite frankly, like him and like two of the others that are on the honorable mentions part. His face looks like he's already been flattened by a kayak paddle.
Now, if he were to say Rye Cooter, then that would be hilarious.
Okay, even I wouldn't even be able to keep a straight face. If Gary Busey came up to me
Rye Cooter
on the street and was just like, Rye Cooter.
Left like Tom Hanks in the Money Pit after the tub fell through the sink.
Rye Cooter. I mean, like, him and his son just, like... Like, Jake Busey, I mean... Jake Busey is at least likable. His dad is just...
Especially with a violin.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And Starship Troopers and stuff like that. I mean, like, any movie I see Gary Busey in, he's not entertaining, to say the least. Ugh.
There's not a single normal picture of this man.
No.
Oh, I thought you were Googling Rye Cooter.
No.
I'm not going to Google that. I'm sorry.
Hands are going on the computer.
Oh, hey, look.
All right, we can't
spend... Well, actually, look, that could be why.
On December 4th, 1988, Busey was severely injured in a motorcycle accident in which he was not wearing a helmet. His skull was fractured, and doctors feared he suffered permanent brain damage.
Suddenly it all makes sense.
Yes. It Okay. Well, look, we're not even on to the actual list. We can't spend all the time talking about the honorable mentions.
All right, so anyway, Gary Busey, another one, Sarah Jessica Parker.
I gotta go with her in it. You know, the original joke would be, hey, the dog says to the horse, why the long face? You know, and there's that one.
Let me guess.
And then a dog
says to Sarah Jessica Parker.
I loved you in Sex and the City.
Yeah. That show, seriously, fuck that shit. I don't know why it was so popular. Basically, I mean, seriously, that show, the show should have been called Sex and the City. It should have been forced love.
STDs in the city. STDs in the city.
Or that, or
Steeds in the city.
Yeah, four skanks bang half of Manhattan.
Sex in the City, birds, bees, and the steeds.
And yet still claim to be powerful female characters.
Yeah, I know, right? Even though they say, like, that's probably, like, the worst detriment to feminism since Barbarella.
Yeah. Yes, they are setting women's rights back.
About a good 30 years.
Yeah.
And you know, obtuse angles with their legs.
Yeah. Well, it's because they don't want to see, you know.
You know what?
The arid canyon that is down there now.
At least...
Hello! Regola!
At least Jane Fonda was pretty hot in that movie.
Yeah, Jane Fonda was hot in Barbarella.
Yeah.
All right. She's fine. Fine. Anyway. So now on to the actual list. Number 10, David Spade.
He's annoying.
I mean, like... There's only ever been one movie that I truly found him funny in, and that was Tommy Boy.
Yeah.
Basically, he's only bearable, and I would say bearable if he's working with Chris Farley. If Chris Farley's not even in the picture, there's absolutely no reason for.
He was good. I liked him in Tommy Boy.
Remember the Hollywood Report? Sorry, I remind you.
He was horrible.
Central.
I mean, let me put it this way. He was good in Tommy Boy. His shtick was starting to wear thin in Black Sheep. He was not funny in Just Shoot Me. And...
He had the same lines that he had in SNL when he was in Just Shoot Me.
Joe Dirt. No, I honestly thought that...
But life's like a garden. Dig it.
Life's a garden. You gotta dig it.
Everyone used that in my senior quotes in 2004. Everyone used that.
Really?
Yeah. Sean, they used life's a garden you dig.
Just gotta keep on keeping on.
Yeah, that one too.
Yeah, Sean, see, the reason I watched Joker was for Christopher Walken.
What?
And Brittany Tucker.
Yeah.
I couldn't give a shit about anyone else. Oh, and Dennis Miller. Dennis Miller was funny.
Yeah.
But anyway, David Spade, one trick pony.
Okay.
So, that... And he's just like that. That's not fair.
That was a pretty good impression.
He was funny in PCU. I'll give him that. But that's because he was
in PCU.
Yeah, he was the leader of the College Republicans in that. I'm sorry. The secret fraternity of balls.
He was
chat.
The antagonist.
Yeah, he was the antagonist in that movie, or one of the antagonists.
Great movie.
All right, number nine is Tracy Morgan.
Yes, I mean,
because
before we move any further, we were talking about Tracy Morgan. What did you guys think about that whole Twitter thing like a few months back, like a month back, 2 months?
You're gonna have to refresh my memory as to what
happened. He said like something along the lines as like he was doing stand up, which you know you shouldn't count on anybody's word when they're doing stand up. And he's saying like if I had like homo son, I kill that boy, like I'll murder him, and then everyone got offended.
You're right. During his performance in Nashville.
And I think it was stupid because, like,
if his son were gay, he would pull out a knife and stab him.
Yeah, like it's stand up. He wasn't serious about it. People get too uptight.
Well, not only that, like, remember there was that one sketch on SNL?
Yeah.
It was like the anti, you're like your parent, like, you, if you're a parent and your kid is gay, there's an anti anxiety drug for, you know, killing off those negative feelings about the fact that your kid's gay. Like, literally, this little black kid comes in wearing an apron. He's like, who wants creme brulee? And Tracy Morgan's like, tosses like a whole bottle of pills down his throat, then downs a bottle of Budweiser.
Who wants creme brulee? I mean, the thing about Tracy Morgan is that no one really cared about him while he was actually on SNL. I mean, they didn't know how to write for him. on that
They
show.
Only cared about him when he was on 30 Rock.
They didn't know what to do with it. And yeah.
See, and that's the thing.
And he was also, like, I loved 30 Rock. And honestly, I loved Tracy Morgan's character on 30 Rock until the most recent seasons, where clearly they just don't know what to do with him anymore. I mean, they don't know how to write for this guy because he plays himself to a point where you can't.
You can't
why even
him.
Give him lines. He's right. just going to get up there and start talking.
He's just going to riff.
And they don't know what to do with him. They don't know how to work him into the plot. They don't know how to come up with things that aren't just, what's Tracy going to do this time?
That's the thing. I honestly don't think Tracy... I never thought Tracy Morgan was funny on SNL, on 30 Rock. I watched 30 Rock for Tina Fey and Alec Baldwin.
Like, he had... He had some good lines on 30 Rock, though.
But keep in mind.
Every now and then, he'll still say something that cracks me up, like, yo, Pigeon, why are you eating people's discarded French fries? Have more respect for yourself. That line cracked me up. But I was in, like, season one.
Yeah.
That is funny. All right, but keep in mind, this is Colin's list, and I think we should be moving on to the next one.
All right, I'll move on to the next one. All right, number 8, Angelina Jolie.
God.
Her lips look like the caterpillar from Fox and the Hound crawled into, like, her lip. Like, her upper lip.
Like, first of all, one...
Like, two caterpillars, like... Went into her lip and she
like seriously her. One, she has no acting ability whatsoever, yet they continue putting her in movies. Two,
see The Tourist?
No one saw The Tourist.
I did. It was awful.
Why would you have seen The Tourist?
Because I wanted to watch a bad movie.
Okay, well, fine.
I picked a good one.
Okay.
That's bad.
One, she can't act. Two, to be perfectly honest, everyone like has this conception that she's attractive. She really isn't.
No, she just looks unnatural.
Yeah. She looks like a store-bought mannequin with a boob job.
Yeah, definitely. Top shelf, you know, a balcony you can do Shakespeare from, but other than that,
yeah, I mean, I mean, that and the fact that, quite frankly, if she, if she adopts another Ethiopian kid, she can legally claim to be a third world country. Seriously. Like, she's so big in the United Nations, that's because she's trying to apply for citizenship. I mean, she's just trying to apply for countryship.
FEMA, take a tip from Angelina Jolie.
But, I mean, there's... Name me... All right, let's be fair. Name me one good movie she's been in. Name me one.
Gone in 30 seconds, but I didn't
gone
like...
Gone in 60 it. Seconds, but not because of her.
But
you didn't even get the name of the movie.
No homo, but I despised her hair. Her hair was like... it just looked...
She's wearing a wig.
Yeah, it was horrible.
All right,
it's awful.
She won an Academy Award for Best Supporting Actress for Girl Interrupted. Any of you guys seen that movie?
No.
I didn't either, so...
No, because there are only two actresses worth mentioning.
I watched, like, a minute and a half clip of it, and I just... I was bored.
There was... There were two
was
actresses...
Was it girls
that,
interrupting each other?
Yeah.
Yeah, there were two actresses, apparently, that they were, you know... They were panning this film out with. It was Winona Ryder, when her career was finally hitting rock bottom, and...
Brittany Murphy?
No, Angelina Jolie.
I'm just seeing who else was in that movie. Okay, yeah, I don't really want to see that.
Yeah. Anyway, but, yeah. So, and that and the fact that she's a little bit of a freak because, you know, that whole thing about her and her brother and... Yeah, and Liz, like, it says here, she has been cited as the world's most beautiful woman.
A title for which she has received substantial media attention.
Seriously, whoever named her as the world's most beautiful woman, look harder.
Yes, follow the tagline of American Beauty, look closer.
Yeah, because when you look closer, you can start seeing the plastic surgery scars.
There's not one, not two, but four citations for that statement, as if like that's the most important part of the article.
Yeah, because they probably think it is. All right, let's see. Number 7, Shia LaBeouf.
Enough LaBeouf.
I mean, first of all, I mean...
I like that saying. I've never heard of it.
I don't even have to describe... you know what? I won't even describe the reasons why I hate Shia LaBeouf. I'm just going to go ahead and start naming movies, and then I think you'll agree with me.
We don't even need to talk about him. We can just talk about the movies that he's
made. Yeah. Transformers.
3.
No, just all of them.
1, 2, and 3.
Yeah. Disturbia.
Transformers, Disturbia.
Indiana Jones.
Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull.
I can't go back.
The Wall Street remake that nobody saw.
Yeah, Wall Street, Money Never Sleeps.
Yeah, it's slept.
Yeah.
Oh. In 2004, he made his directorial debut with the short film Let's Love Hate, and later directed and shot the music video for I Never Knew You by rapper Cage.
What's that called?
Oh, Let's he was Love also Hate. He was also in Holes.
I think Holes is the only...
Remember that? He was in Holes.
Holes is the only decent thing he's in, and that's because he's just young. And that's
because he knew he didn't pick shitty roles.
Yeah, and plus, I think it had Christopher Walken in it.
John Voight.
John Voight?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
John
Voight and Sigourney Weaver.
Aha. Uh-huh.
All right, well, moving on.
All right, so number six, Tom Cruise.
I'm honestly surprised he's not higher in this list.
The problem is, he probably would have been higher, but honestly, after that whole beef with him in South Park, I really haven't heard anything from him. I think he's actually realized that he was being a bit of a dick about it.
Yeah, that's why I really like the second part of their quote-unquote, like, most offensive episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I still don't understand why that episode got as much controversy as it did.
What, you mean the Scientology episode?
No, the one with the... I mentioned the name earlier. It's the most popular name in the world. It starts with an M.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Oh, that episode.
Well, yeah, but no, the track in the closet, didn't that get, like, an Emmy or something?
It did, and then...
Or was it nominated for one?
I think it actually did win for that
one. Oh, yeah, the Scientology bit, like, Isaac Hayes left, and that's why they killed him off and used sound clips when he was a robot.
Yeah.
In those episodes.
Yeah, it got a Emmy.
Yeah.
Or it was nominated. It was nominated for Primetime Emmy for Outstanding Animated Program.
Hello, children.
But it was also... TV Guide ranked it as number 17 on its top 100 episodes of all time. Of all shows. Like, that episode... Like,
I can believe it. Well, because...
I think it is. It is.
Remember how much hilarious. Remember how much shit got thrown up because of that?
That's just because... Yeah. It just doesn't make sense.
What happened was... Cause it's amazing. Because Viacom owned Paramount, and Paramount owned Mission Impossible... Remember, it was Tom Cruise was going to refuse to, you know, promote Mission Impossible 3 when it came out. Because it came out at about the same time that episode came out. And Tom Cruise refused to do it if they continued showing that episode. And I think it was Viacom went to him and was like, all right, fine. We won't promote Mission Impossible 3.
Right.
Exactly.
You know what it is?
You know how much that show is generating right now because of that episode?
Yeah.
And he was like, he finally had to back down because he was going
to
lose.
Right. That alone was enough to fund, their Broadway play, Book of Mormon.
Pretty much.
Right. What annoys me about the thing about this episode is that it's not like, I don't think Trapped in the Closet was any more, like, profound or offensive than any other South Park episode. It just so happens that this particular episode, the people they're making fun of had lots of money. Like, that's it. It's just that Scientologists just have a lot of money, and that's why they're
able to create such a stink about it. Well, that and the fact that Tom Cruise probably took it personally because they were insinuating that him, John Travolta, and R. Kelly were gay. The entire episode.
But, like, that wasn't even a funny joke to me. So, I don't know, whatever.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying, that's...
We got off on a little tangent there.
Yeah, but anyway... But, I mean, honestly, he's not higher on the list because, quite frankly, he has been
in some good movies.
No, he has been in great movies. He's been, I mean, like, he was in Top Gun, Days of Thunder.
A Few Good Men.
I mean, Jerry Maguire, also good. The Last Samurai, even though it's a ridiculous fucking premise, I honestly enjoyed that movie.
Yeah, actually, like, Collateral was actually
Minority
good.
Report, that was a great film.
Yeah, Collateral was pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah, but, I mean... That's why he's not higher on the list, in my opinion. He's done so many great films, and he honestly hasn't made a stink about shit lately.
But he is still pretty obnoxious. So.
Right.
Yeah.
Next one.
Okay, number five, Hayden Christensen.
Again, Obi-Wan, he's not letting me. It's not fair.
You know, I don't know if
you kill younglings, Anakin.
My first movie was about his whininess.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I don't know where the hell they found this kid.
He really hasn't been in that much, actually. It really doesn't seem like he's, like, outside of Star Wars. What? How much has he actually
He did that
been?
One movie. I forgot what it was. He had blue hair in it.
He was in Jumper.
Yeah, to the IMDb.
Oh, he's got it.
Yeah, here. I mean, okay.
Yeah, look.
Let's see how many of these movies I've actually heard of.
Yeah, just start reading. Start reading them.
That movie.
Life is a House.
I think that's what that was.
Yeah, I think that's what...
That's the one where he has blue hair.
That's it. He's not really been in that many movies. He's been in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. He's been like you know, less than 20 movies.
The reason why George picked him is because he just is wooden as his dialogue.
Pretty much.
Yeah. And
oh, dear Lord.
He was in an episode of Goosebumps.
Yeah. He played the character Zane.
He was... Oh, and in an episode of Are You Afraid of the Dark. Now, that's versatility. Goosebumps and Are You Afraid of the Dark.
Wow. But, yeah, I mean, Hayden Christensen, let's be honest here, he's just... He basically ruined one of the most badass characters of all time.
Right.
He just basically turned Darth Vader into a pussy.
He basically tanked an entire trilogy of films that... Yeah. Could have been some of the, you know, most important films of the last 10 years, and instead,
like, yeah, quite frankly, if they had just honestly just, you know, basically left Jake Lloyd as you know, Skywalker, I might have looked more favorably upon the series. Because, I mean, what was it? They took like a 2-year break between each film, right, to film the next one.
Right, yeah.
So, I mean, Jake Lloyd would have been like, what, 13, 14 when he actually did, you know, what's it called? Attack of the Clones, and they would have been like damn near 20 by the time Revenge of the Sith came out.
Yeah.
I mean, like, there was no likable part of any of his performances in the Star Wars.
I mean, I don't think that would have worked just using Jake Lloyd. What would have worked is find a different person. Someone...
Find a better actor.
Better yeah. acting.
Because, I mean, like...
Apparently, Lucas turned down DiCaprio... And Ryan Phillip, as well as 1,500
other candidates.
How? That is mind-boggling. Out of 1,500 candidates, including Leonardo fucking DiCaprio, he picked Hayden Christensen.
I mean, I'm not a fan of Leo because...
I mean, I can see why he didn't pick Leo, because he would have, like, it's too big a name. It's too big. He would have, like...
It's too big a name, and plus Leo has a bit of, there's another word for it, but sameness that he has with everything else.
Maybe this doesn't make sense. I almost think he's too good an actor for that role because, like...
That too, but...
Because it's not a serious film. Plus,
to be honest, he probably wasn't in his budget.
That too.
Yeah, I mean, and then, obviously...
I mean, George was making a lot of money, but he wasn't making enough to afford DiCaprio.
It says that Lucas turned him down, not that DiCaprio turned the part down. Lucas turned him down.
Huh.
Lucas is quoted as saying that he chose Christensen because he, quote, needed an actor who has that presence of the dark side that was essential to solidify the story that Lucas was trying
to... Are you sure that wasn't just, you know, boring?
I mean, to be honest, let's be fair here. Hayden Christensen has absolutely no personality whatsoever.
Are you sure he didn't feel the presence of wood? No pun intended, but, like, just...
And then probably the most irritating thing about it
Ben
is...
Ben Stein looks like freaking... Exciting compared to...
Ben Stein? compared to Hayden Christensen...
I'll insert a word in post.
Compared to Hayden Christensen, Ben Stein is the world's most interesting man.
Yeah.
I think Ben Stein is pretty interesting.
Yeah, he is pretty interesting. I like his documentary.
Did you ever watch Win Ben Stein's Money? That show was really entertaining.
Yes, but I think that was more of the dynamic between him and Jimmy Kimmel.
True.
Yeah. All right. But anyway,
his documentary on Netflix.
Not only is Hayden Christensen's performance in the prequel trilogy obnoxious, Lucas found it necessary to go in and replace Sebastian Shaw with Hayden Christensen when he put out the trilogy. I was like, that is probably like the biggest slap in the face of like all of it.
Right, yeah.
You put in a third-rate actor who basically sank the damn franchise, and then now you're rewriting the canon of the original films, which is all we have left, and put him in it. It's fucking frustrating. Anyway, so...
Next one.
Number 4, Ben Affleck.
Oh, Affleck. I almost feel sorry for Affleck, but then you realize that, like... He's just not that talented.
Hey, nope. put my name on there too. But you didn't do anything. Yeah, just write my name on.
Just write me in.
Yeah. Do I even need to go over the fact that about Ben Affleck? I mean, quite frankly, if you've seen him in anything, he's a fucking douchebag.
Yeah, he is. Have you seen him in what's that movie with
anything
with Christopher Walken cameo and Al Pacino cameo?
Geely. The worst film of all time.
It is. It's really, really bad.
And see, here's the thing. People who are listening to this, this is not just our opinion. This is actually proven. This movie had the lowest the lowest return at the box office. It is.
Look it up on Rotten Tomatoes. You'll see a really low score. It doesn't even make up to the tens.
Yes, it has been frequently cited as among the worst movies ever made.
Except the best thing about that movie is Christopher Walken's line.
What?
The best thing about that movie is Christopher Walken's line.
Still,
it has nothing to do with Ben Affleck and his horrible. Just the character was awful too.
The film cost bad altogether. The film cost $54 million to make.
But only grossed $6
million. Yeah. It was just a smug. He played a smug douchebag, which he basically played himself in that movie.
The film is Rotten Tomatoes' top 100 worst. Is the number one on the top 100 worst reviewed movies in the last 10 years.
So,
number one.
Yeah. Check it out.
It has a 6% rating.
We ain't lying, folks.
Yeah, so it's not, we're not fucking around here. It is probably the worst film of all time. I mean, even the roles where he's supposedly good, like Mallrats, he sucked.
Mallrats is a great movie, but...
Dogma?
No. He's a dick in that, too.
He's a dick in everything.
He's not even... No, I mean, like, there's...
He's just a giant walking dick.
Here's the thing. There are dick characters which you can identify with and you enjoy their performance. He is just a dick character where you don't enjoy his performance. And that's just... No.
And right, yeah, like, what pisses me off is, like, the town. Like, he was clearly like, oh, hey, Matt Damon was in a crime movie. I can do that, too. So he tried to make the exact same movie as The Departed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Affleck, but you know what? If you didn't want people to hate you so much, be a better actor.
Just stop acting.
Just stop.
Just
cut it out.
Yeah, seriously, you're horrible. But not as horrible as our number three. Nicolas Cage.
The bees, not the bees. Oh, God. Who, what, where?
Now, the thing is about Nicolas Cage, I'm pretty sure that even if we were to actually hit him in the face with a kayak paddle, it's not going to change anything. I don't think he has the self-awareness. What we need to do is just hit him enough times that he stops. Like, this isn't about... I would say the rest of these guys, the rest of these actors, the kayak paddle to the face is more about a wake-up call. It's like, hey... Stop that. This is what... But this... For Nick Cage, I think it's just a matter of national security.
There's a t-shirt on earwolf.com I almost want to get. It's called... It has Nicolas Cage yelling on it. And it's called Ridiculous Cage.
Actually, there's a demotivational poster. It's got a picture of Nicolas Cage. He's just looking. He's like...
For the people that are listening, they definitely hear Colin's face.
Yes.
Oh, by the way, in February 2011, Cage claimed to have created a new method of acting that he calls Nouveau Shamanic. He claims to have used the acting style throughout his career and one day plans to write a book about the method.
I mean...
No, say that in a hipster voice.
Nouveau Shamanic.
Vintage.
Nouveau Shamanic.
He claims to have used the acting style throughout his career, and one day is going to write a book about it.
You know, I identify.
I was into Nouveau Shamanic before it was cool. Yeah.
But I mean, let's be fair here. Nicolas Cage, no, there is no good performance ever.
Yeah, you know how I burn my mouth.
What about Leaving Las Vegas?
I ate the pizza before it was cool.
That's a shit movie.
Well,
no. Con Air, not a good movie either.
Con Air sucks.
Con Air. What about Face Off?
No.
Face Off? No.
I love Face Off.
Here's the thing. Nicolas Cage is not good for being good. He's good for being bad. Yeah. Like, you watch him because you want to watch him something bad.
Right, see, but here's the thing, though. Face Off is bad because, one, John Travolta is acting over the top, which is wrong, and Nicolas Cage is acting serious, which is also wrong.
My favorite performance of him is in The Rock. Just because him and the chemistry kind of like between Sean Connery is like...
Listen to this. Right. The film exemplifies gun-fu and heroic bloodshed action sequences.
What movie are they talking about?
Face Off.
No, they can't be talking about that movie.
Yeah, and has Travolta and Cage each playing two personalities. It is the first Hollywood film in which Wu was given complete creative control and was acclaimed by both audiences and critics. Eventually grossing $245 million worldwide, Face Off was considered a financial success.
Face Off.
See,
I'm curious.
That's how Sean Connery put it. Face Off.
Face Off.
Curious as to what the legacy of Face Off is.
This is the problem is, if Face Off has grossed $245 million worldwide, that's what's making us horrible as a race.
I think, yeah, we haven't moved.
We're perpetuating the career of the dullard.
But when did that movie come out?
1997.
Okay, we weren't as evolved yet as we are now. And it's only been a few years.
I don't think that's an excuse, Sean.
What? It's been more than 10 years.
Yeah, but people are still buying it on DVD. The money pile is still growing. We're still perpetuating the career of a dullard here. The man is not entertaining in the slightest.
I think he's pretty entertaining on The Rock.
No.
I love The Rock.
No, that's like Sean Connery. Sean Connery is the only reason that movie is bearable.
I like Face Off.
Dude,
but you don't like Face Off for Nicolas Cage.
Dude, you fucked up your Ferrari.
I know. He's got those golden guns.
Yes.
I'm borrowing your Humvee.
Oh, and that part where they're at the prison with the, like, magnetic boots for some reason.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. She sold seashells on the seashore on Sunday.
Yes.
Okay.
Go. Yeah. All right. Anyway, number two, Christian Bale.
Yes. Stop it, Christian Bale.
Just stop. Do we even need to go into an explanation? You're such a dick.
Well, good for you. There's a bloody fucking light set out there, and I was right in the middle of the fuck. Fuck you.
Where's the Joker? Where's the Joker?
Jesus. You beat your mother with that mouth?
I don't understand. I don't.
The Batman Joker.
I don't understand any words you're
saying. Did you guys see Terminator Salvation?
Yeah.
Oh my god, that was a shit show.
Yeah.
Oh my god. You know what? The weird like CGI Arnold that attacks him at the end gave a more credible performance than Christian Bale in that.
The
movie.
CGI in Blade 2 was better.
Ugh.
And that was really bad.
To be honest, I wish they had gone for the original ending of that film.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would have been far more entertaining.
Yeah.
What was the original ending?
The original ending is Sam Worthington, Christian Bale's character actually dies.
Oh, good.
Because John Connor is such a, you know, he's supposedly, you know, like the only, you know, he is the resistance, basically.
Right.
He's the only thing keeping it going. Sam Worthington's character cuts off his skin and puts it on, and he becomes John Connor.
Yeah.
With Face Off, basically.
The only film I saw where I actually liked Christian Bale was American Psycho.
Yeah.
Like, Dark Knight was the awesome remake. Movie, but it wasn't
the shot for shot
Bale.
Remake.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, it was
like American Psycho is the only where I actually liked Christian Bale himself in that role.
Yeah. Because he probably does that kind of shit in his normal life.
I could see it.
Maybe not the murders, but, like, you know, fucking up prostitutes, chasing them with a chainsaw.
That movie is awesome.
Ah!
That business card scene.
Oh, yeah. That is great.
Where he's just, like, freaking out over the guy's business card.
Oh, my God. It's even got a watermark.
Oh, he's really funny in, what's it, the one, Reign of Fire? With Matthew McConaughey.
Oh, I never saw. Was that the one where they're like all fighting right, dragons right. or
yeah.
something?
Yeah. There's one scene where Matthew McConaughey and Christian Bale are yelling at each other inside, and they're talking like yelling about like survival of the human race. And at one point, Matthew McConaughey goes, "Look it out there, and they burn it. It's burnt." And he just has his face. He looks like a white supremacist because his head is completely shaved, and he just has like this kind of goatee going. So moving on.
Hey, you know what? That movie did get the Academy of Science Fiction, Fantasy, and Horror Films Best Fantasy Film of 2002, and Festival de Cine de Sitges.
won Best Visual Effects and best film.
That was
so their standards must have been pretty low.
Yeah.
That's a Spanish film festival.
Oh yeah, totally.
La Reina Fea.
Anyway, but coming now to our number one. Now, our number one, to be perfectly honest, is not one, but two people. Because quite frankly, I find them so irritating. So nauseating. I literally want to like smash their faces in until they are a bloody pulp.
They're sort of like they've morphed into one sort of weird hybrid creature that's neither human nor... Well, just say it.
It's the Twilight Kids. It's Kristen Stewart and Robert Pattinson.
Yeah.
A couple
yeah.
of no-name hacks who just happened to luck themselves into Hollywood magic, apparently. At least that's what... I mean, like, quite frankly, one,
Robert Pattinson is probably one of the ugliest motherfuckers I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah. Not only that, but apparently he has terrible, terrible body odor. Never washes his hair, never showers. And his coworkers constantly complain about his horrible hygiene.
Well, and apparently the reason behind that is...
Not making this shit up.
No, apparently the reason behind that is because of the fact that because so many 17-year-old to 40-year-old women love him, like, he has to, like, keep the stink up as, like, a protective shield.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, he's particularly renowned for his terrible breath. That's right.
Coffee and eggs.
Yes. This is a quote from someone who works in very close quarters with Robert Pattinson. He stinks. I mean, it's awful. He never showers, and it drives people on the set crazy. I really wish I knew who that person was.
Kristen Stewart?
Maybe.
Guess that sounds better.
Okay, see, here's the thing,
sounds
though.
Like something
here's the thing. Out of the two of them, I hate Kristen Stewart more.
Because she's just an idiot.
She's ugly, and quite frankly, the character is just
on the screen and off the screen.
That's my question. Is it because of her, or is it because she's playing one of the worst characters in all of, like, Western fiction? Like,
yeah.
Is it so much her, or is it the character?
I'm going to say, because of the fact... Here's the thing.
Yeah, because her character is pretty...
It's part of the role, but you have to remember, you watch the film... See, I haven't watched any of the films, okay?
Me neither.
Yeah, it's just... I hate what Twilight has become.
Yeah.
So much. And these two are at the forefront of it.
Yeah.
So, okay, maybe it's not fair. Maybe I'm just being completely blind ignorant on the subject. Maybe I am. But quite frankly, I hate Twilight, and these two are the very representation of Twilight.
Yeah.
And so, in my opinion, they are at fault. It is their fault.
I was cool with vampires when Blade was out. I really was. I thought vampires were like, they had the forefront of the antagonist position, and I thought that was great. And then along came Twilight, and then that all of a sudden has romance shoved into it, and I'm like, it just ruined it.
Yeah.
It ruined vampires for me.
It's not like they invented the idea of the vampire romance.
Well, no, they didn't, but they're definitely like one of the first ones to make it worldwide.
All I'm saying is that, quite frankly, after this Twilight series is over, they seriously just need to stop getting work.
Yeah.
Because they're not talented.
And they have enough money to live off of for a while.
Because of Twilight, they never have to work another day in their lives. Let's just all stop going to their movies, please. Because, quite frankly, you're perpetuating the downfall of American cinema by going to see Twilight. You really are.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's...
You're one of the reasons.
Let's just... Before we even, like, start worrying about their careers after Twilight ends, let's just hope Twilight ends. All right? That's a big enough thing to pray for.
Yeah, I just want it to end. I just want it to be over.
Supposedly, it's supposed to end after the part two of Breaking Dawn or whatever.
Right, but I mean, the sad thing is that it's a fandom now. It's not like it's just going to end. It's not like it's like Star Wars
there are no
or
more
Harry
books
Potter. It's, there well, there's no more Harry Potter books. There's no more Star Wars movies. Those things are still going to be around for a long time. Sad thing is that Twilight now holds as much of a place in American popular culture as any of those other things. So unfortunately, like, you can't do anything about it.
America, this is your fault. Why do you have to like the sparkly vampires?
Stupid. Yeah.
So I blame every 17-year-old girl.
There is no perfect man on Earth. So
yeah.
So stop thinking about
it.
You know
what's the word?
There isn't.
A girl.
Sean's sister is giving us a stink eye because of it. It's true.
All right, this girl that I went to, that I used to want to go to college with, she once told me about Twilight that it was, quote, the most realistic romance that she'd ever read. And I was like, wait, you mean the one with the vampires and the werewolves?
And the people turning in the animals and...
And I was like...
And people sparkling.
Do you want to elaborate on that? She's like, they're...
Where the whole world is emo
their
and...
Their relationship. It's just so real. What?
Okay, the dude cares.
Help, please. Somebody.
Yeah, I was gonna say there's the biggest. There's
the dude actually is in touch with his feelings and cares.
Yeah, there's
not,
the biggest.
Not like
that's the biggest plot hole in the entire film.
If Edward,
the man actually cares about the female's
spiritual if
emotional growth.
If it were realistic, Edward would be sitting playing video games or something, and the girl, and Bella would be sitting there and like, why do you always play video games? That would be realistic.
Yeah. To be fair, this is the same girl who told a friend of mine that he, quote, did not understand how the world works because he's not going to medical school. So
I would understand if, you know, that statement was, you don't understand how the human body works because you're not going to medical school.
No, you don't understand life because you're not going to medical school. The epitome of why
was she going to medical school?
Pre-med people.
Was she going to medical school?
I believe she's in medical school now. We were the same year, so we graduated the same year.
My sister's a pre-med.
That's fine.
Was
wrong with pre-med. It's just, let's be honest here. You've been around pre-med people. They've all got this sense of entitlement. Heads are firmly planted up their asses.
You know I'm talking about hating a group, not an individual person.
Like, you know, you might have been pre-med, but you're cool. We like you.
Yeah.
So she's giving us the thumbs up.
Lauren, right, great. Lauren is approved by Bowley Going Nowhere.
Lauren is approved.
Excellent. Approved. We give you the seal of approval. All right.
Awesome. So, all right. That's enough of my top 10 list. Stop Twilight, please. Just stop it.
Now it's over.
Just please, stop it. All right. Now, Sean, give us some Twill updates, please.
Update.
Okay. Today, I gandered at Eagle Raptor's page, and he goes, everyone is playing Zelda today, time to be a hipster. And he has a twit pic here, and it's a picture of let's see if I can turn it around here. It's a picture of Super Castlevania 4.
Yes, that is the pinnacle of the series.
And
Super Castlevania 4,
everyone's playing Zelda, time to be a hipster, and he put that picture up.
Yes. You know why the greatest...
Why is everyone playing Zelda?
Because Skyward Sword came out today.
Oh,
while
it just came
reporting.
Out today?
Yeah, it came out November 20th.
Wow. But to be fair, I'm really out of the loop.
Yeah, I kind of wanted to pre-order a copy, but, you know, I wanted to see what the game review is. But apparently, it's really good, so...
It's... You know what it is? It's, you know... How much money is Nintendo paying game reviewers? That's the question.
Actually, you know, Money doesn't usually... Go into
just,
it.
I'm just saying. That's all. But anyway, but yeah, I mean, Super Castlevania 4 is definitely the pinnacle of that series. Why? You could whip the whip in any direction.
Yeah.
Like, you could whip up, you could whip down, you could whip forward and backward. In any of the subsequent games and the previous games, you could only whip forward, turn around, and whip backward. You couldn't whip in any other direction.
In multiple directions?
Yes.
Holy shit!
So yeah, you could use the whip and, you know, swing to a corner and stuff. You couldn't do that in any of the new ones, which I don't get. Why would you regress your gameplay? That makes no sense. Anyway, what else you got, Sean?
Edgar Wright, the director of Scott Pilgrim versus the World,
yeah. Hot Fuzz, Shaun of the Dead.
Lousy weather seems to be a good excuse to stay in and watch Billy Wilder films.
Yeah, I can believe that.
Yeah. So, Other than that, I kind of want to just turn this from the 12 update. I just gave you a few, like a couple, just to, you know, get your fill.
Yeah.
But right now, I want to talk about food.
Because
you're probably listening to this in or around Thanksgiving, because this one will be, it's going to be published the day before on Thanksgiving's Eve, even though there's no such thing.
That is probably the most irritating thing I've seen in like the last couple of days. We walked into a restaurant. There was a sign out front saying, we're going to be open on Thanksgiving Eve until 1 a.m. of the next day, like Thanksgiving Day. I'm like, what?
Eve? Okay.
What the fuck is Thanksgiving Eve?
Well, I sure hope you're open because it's not a holiday. it's
like,
just a day.
Yeah. What is Thanksgiving Eve?
It would be the eve before Thanksgiving.
But why are they making that like it's a big deal, though?
Because holy shit, Colin, it's Thanksgiving Eve. All right.
It's going to become one holiday. Thanksgiving, Christmas, Thanksmas.
Thanks, Christmas.
Thanks, Christmas.
Or Christgiving.
Christgiving. I like that. Christgiving.
Sunday, it's time for Christgiving.
How about Thanksgiving? Oh,
wow.
Thanksgiving.
The audio didn't pop there. Nope.
Did it?
Yeah.
Sorry.
That's all right. You're just making me do work. I'll have the time to do it.
Okay.
Hey, Sean.
Yeah.
Roy Cooter.
Roy Cooter.
I'm just imagining this Jewish lady squatting down in the middle of the red aisle into a loaf of bread. A rye bread. Rye Cooter.
Stop.
Rye plus Cooter. Rye Cooter.
Or, you know, if you say it fast enough, it sounds like
But Rye Cooter. I Googled Rye Cooter. It said, do you mean as Rye Cooter? And it said with a D. So I thought it was Cooter. So
I don't even know why
it's my mistake there.
Yeah, see, you
now
you
now
back up, didn't you?
Now it's not as funny, but
well, I didn't know he was gonna say that.
Or is it? I don't
pretty
know.
Sure anybody who was still listening immediately turned it off as soon as you said old Jewish woman squatting. They're done.
I'm done. Forget it.
Shut it down.
All right. Anyway, food. So we're on food now. Although
right, because those are two things I want to associate.
Rye bread.
Shut your cankle.
Rye bread. Are you gonna eat any
shut
rye
your
bread?
Cankle. You're not derailing.
Next time you bite into a pastrami sandwich, just
all
think,
right.
Just
all
think.
Right. We all know about the turkey. Real quick, favorite side dish.
Mashed potatoes and gravy.
I think my brain is shut off right now thanks
stuffing?
To Rye Cooter.
I'm gonna go with stuffing.
Stuffing's actually really good.
It's probably my favorite.
Yeah, stuffing. Yeah, stuffing, chicken and regular, because we have two different types of stuffing. Because my dad's allergic to turkey. If
really?
You know, yeah,
sweet potatoes.
It's
also.
it's the hormone that you the antibiotic
tryptophan.
That they yeah no it's not tryptophan. It's the antibiotic that they put in the turkey.
Huh.
Yeah. Because right. Turkeys are immune to certain allergens.
All right. Now least favorite side dish.
Least favorite.
Cranberry sauce.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to say the cranberry sauce. I'm not really. Yeah, it's not my thing.
Like if I'm gonna eat cranberries, I'm gonna eat cranberries, not a congealed jelly that tastes reminiscent of cranberry.
Now on that subject, if you do, we already said we all think cranberry sauce is least favorite. But if you do have to eat cranberry sauce, which do you prefer? Do you prefer the just cylindrical mass or the kind with the actual cranberries in it?
The kind with the actual cranberries in it.
Even though it's got the little things that poke your like the little sticks in it that poke you. And get stuck in your teeth?
If you did it that way, you're doing it wrong.
I mean, it is like, it's more reassuring to have actual berries in the sauce.
Yeah, but like the thing is, if it's sticky, if it sticks in your teeth everywhere, you're doing it wrong. Yeah. It should be like a puree-like substance that you put in a blender. Yeah. And there shouldn't be any sticks.
Yeah, in that case, you should have taken the stems out before you started making the sauce.
Yeah.
But, I mean, like, if you have to eat cranberry sauce, make it from scratch. Just do it. It's not that hard.
Leave the cherry stems for your makeup parties or whatever.
Yeah.
All right.
But anyway, so.
Are there any side dishes that you guys do for your Thanksgiving that are not like, not the traditional standards?
I'm trying to think what.
Lasagna.
Lasagna for your.
Go on.
My parents, because we come from a Irish Italian family. I mean, I know just looking at me. If you've seen pictures
beep,
on
beep,
our Facebook
boop.
Page,
oh, sure.
I'm a fat ginger kid, so I identify more with the Irish part of the family than, but I have, it's basically I have the drunk tolerance of an Irishman and I have the food tolerance of an Italian. So,
here's a steak.
Yeah,
steak. Okay.
We have steak on the side for whoever doesn't really want turkey and doesn't want to have a coma after. So
That makes sense.
Yeah.
But, yeah, we do, my parents, my dad cooks lasagna every now and again, or some Italian dish.
Oh, spiral ham.
Yeah, ham's good.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, ham, I can understand, though. I mean, ham is probably.
I think of ham as more of a Christmas thing, but,
But, I mean, it's like, it's a ham or an Easter alternative. I mean, but it's an alternative to turkey.
Yeah.
Like, I actually prefer ham.
They serve turkey at Thanksgiving, too. But normally it's either one or the other.
I actually prefer ham.
No, and there's one side dish that I usually cook, but I add my own seasonings just for the sheer fact that you can't just use it by can alone. A green bean casserole.
Yes.
Super easy to make.
Yeah, my mom makes a green bean casserole. It's pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty easy. Like, you just use a couple of cans of the mushroom, but I usually add in some like garlic powder, some onion powder, maybe some chili powder, and a couple other things. And sometimes we'll actually have, the casserole side, we'll actually have fish.
Yeah. Really? What kind of fish?
The first Thanksgiving, they actually served fish.
That's true.
Yeah. That's usually true, like a tilapia.
That's true. We don't actually eat like what they ate at the, like, corn, fish.
I'll eat corn sometimes.
Vegetables. Like, we don't, no one eats that stuff at Thanksgiving anymore.
I do. I eat corn every now and again.
Okay, good.
Justin just patted Colin on his belly.
Yeah.
Siskel just patted Ebert.
Yeah, you know, that's how Siskel died, you know.
Like getting patted on his tummy?
No, because Ebert tore him apart because he patted his belly.
Oh, sometimes we serve venison.
Nice.
It's good if you cook it right. And if you hunt it right.
So I'm like,
I know that sounds weird, but if you
barbecue,
if you game it
like pulled venison.
The thing is, I'm all right, vegans and vegetarians, plug your ears for a second or fast forward. when you kill the deer, if you drain all the fluids out of the deer, then it won't become as gamey. So, and that's usually most people go wrong with that, and that's why deer gets this gamey taste. But if you do that, and then you take it straight to your local butcher and have it get chopped up in nice slabs and put in the freezer, it's really good.
Mm, fascinating.
Yeah, I know a lot about food.
Yeah.
Yeah. So is Colin. Right. Yeah.
Oh yes. Because I'm a fat bastard. I've enjoyed my fair share.
It too.
Should we talk leftovers?
Yes.
Ooh, I like putting like everything in a sandwich.
Yeah, that's always get some. Now I can't even think of rye bread anymore because you've ruined rye bread for me. But
that's some sauerkraut.
Rye bread, bunch of turkey. Maybe put a little bit of the stuffing in there, but and just like ketchup, you know, a lot of the slab it with some sauce, and cold turkey is awesome.
Colin, stop making the sound with your foot on the end of the microphone pole.
Sorry.
It's making us going doo 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 doo. I'm not taking it out.
I didn't want you to.
Yeah.
Alright. Here's what I do, and this might sound a little weird. Okay. But
in a bathtub and then take the turkey.
No, he takes the gravy. It's a gravy tub. Then he dips himself in it.
He
sits down real
slowly. And then he molds biscuits in the form of ducks. And then he places the ducks in the gravy.
And then
gravy
he just
tub.
Takes butter and slabs it everywhere.
And then goes la 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 la.
Seriously, all right.
Yeah,
what
I'll
do,
be honest. That sounds a little weird.
Yeah, probably does. But I don't do it. So anyway,
sorry, listening.
What I do is depending on what's left over, you know. Normally I have turkey, mashed potatoes, stuffing left over. So what I do is, you ever seen those like the pastry shells things?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like if you defrost those and then, you know, put them over like a pie or something.
Yeah.
What I do is I get like a Tupperware dish.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I put one layer of mashed potatoes, I put one layer of stuffing, and then one layer of turkey, and then between each layer I put a pastry shell, and it's sort of like a
so it's kind of like you're building like a shepherd's pie or something
like that. Something akin to that, and then, you know, you cook it for about, I don't know, 15-20 minutes, wait till the crust gets crispy, and then you just basically, you know, cut it into pieces and you put gravy on it.
All right, awesome. Well,
it tastes good.
This is all making me really hungry, so I think it's time to go get some food. So let me hear from you guys, listeners. Email us at bgnpodcast@gmail.com. You know, tell us favorite side dishes, least favorite, creative dishes, what you do with your leftovers, you know, all that good stuff. So until next time, I'm Justin Eisenstadt.
I'm Colin Kaknis.
I'm Sean Holmes.
And we are boldly going nowhere.
Outro.
Boldly Going Nowhere is a Castwave Studios production. For other shows and more, visit castwavestudios.com. Wow, that sounded great.